now offering prefix dinner and wine on Thursdays with the movie beginning at 9. Brunch serves Saturday and Sunday, rustic Italian atmosphere and tradition at Peter Lowell's Cafe, online at peterlowells.com. 7 o'clock, time now for the wine country's most delicious hour, Mouthful.
You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be running out of.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, some tomato paste. You fry it. You make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil. You shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? Have a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
Potatoes, yeah.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Mmm, delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Did you make it to your favorite farmer's market this weekend? I hope so. This past pole market was lovely as usual. And yet, before I introduce our guest, who I literally found at the farmer's market today, I have to say I was in Vallejo yesterday and I went to the Vallejo farmer's market. And one of the things I love about going to farmers markets is they really express the community. And I saw things at the Vallejo market that I've never seen anywhere. For example, I didn't know that the greens from bitter melon were a really common green in certain cuisines, Asian cuisines. And there were these just mounds of bitter greens everywhere. There were also some vegetables, one that looks like a Mexican churro or churro, that long donut. And there's this green. It must be at least a foot long and about as big around as a churro. And I'm not quite sure what to do with it. And I wasn't really in the position to do shopping while I was there. Didn't know if things would keep. So I'm going to be going back and doing some more research. But it was so fun. Plus, there's a lot of cultural diversity in Vallejo, big African-American community. And that community is really well represented at the market, and it made me feel more than anything sort of like I feel in New Orleans. You know, all sort of gets rid of some of that Puritan uptightness, and people are flirting, and you know, guys are winking at you and calling you baby, and it's totally non-threatening. It just makes you feel good. It was awesome. And there's a taco truck there. There was another food tent, and they had things on sticks, but not, you know, kebabs or anything. And they had chicken teriyaki on a stick, and it was the best chicken teriyaki I have ever had. There were also a lot of dogs, and it seems the dog of choice in Vallejo these days appears to be the Chihuahua. There were a whole lot of them. So I'm going to be making a couple more trips over there. And I also hear that the farmer's market in Benicia, which is just, you know, touches Vallejo, just a few miles, 4 or 5 miles from Vallejo, that's a Thursday evening market, I think, and it's supposed to be a really great market, too. So I'll be talking about them more as I increase my research. And this is all for this trip over to the Vallejo Farmers Market and to Benicia and any others. It's part of the series I've been doing for the Press Democrat, started in February, and I've been doing one county a month, doing all the counties that touch on Sonoma County. And Solano County touches us just a little bit, but it does. That will probably be coming up in July. But coming up tonight, we are talking about locally raised chicken, meats, heritage turkeys, lamb, beef, pork, out between Freestone and Valley Forge, I guess you could say. And There she was, Nancy Prebilich.
Mm-hmm.
I did
Very
it.
Good.
Nancy Prebilich with a little sign that says Sonoma County Meat Buying Club. And what a find. And she had these three delightful kids with her, who I mistakenly took as her children. They are her nephews and her niece. And we have with us Alexander and Nicholas Holland or Hollins?
Holland.
Holland.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for coming on Mouthful, guys.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And we have a little bit shorter over there, Samantha. I can just barely see you above the console. And thank you for coming to Mouthful, too. You all live in Sebastopol, don't you?
Yeah.
On the same property as your great-great-grandpa, is that right?
Yeah.
That's so great. And then the ranch, Gleason Ranch, mm-hmm. out on Bodega Highway. Uh-huh. That's in the fence. Explain this whole family relationship. How does this all...
The history?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in 1860, my great-great-grandfather first came to Bodega, and he founded a dairy literally on the coast. In fact, we had a portion of the coastline, and that's now where Gleason Beach is.
Oh,
so
uh-huh.
a lot of people know our name even from the beach. And as I was explaining before we got on air, I think at some point they realized getting up at 5:30 in the morning to hand milk a bunch of cows and that wind and the rain and the cold and the fog was a little bit much. So they hopped over the hill to the town of Bodega.
Oh, okay.
And
not far,
but I'll tell you, enough to make a difference when you're out there uh-huh. and you just make that little drive from the uh-huh. township to Bodega Bay.
That's interesting that they went that route. A lot of people would say, this getting up at 5:30 in the morning and milking in the wind and fog, I think I'm going to do something else.
Yeah, go to Sacramento or something.
Or, become a seamstress.
Right, right.
A tailor. But right. they decided to keep just to move the dairy.
Just to move the dairy. My great-great-grandfather moved into the township of Bodega probably in about 1890s. And then his son, David Gleason, founded the property we're on now in 1912. And we were a Jersey dairy all the way up through the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, we were probably about 300 acres. And over the years, through the generations, it got smaller and smaller. So now we're down to about 98 acres, which is still considerably large mm-hmm. by today's standards. And back in the, my grandfather really struggled, especially during, say, between the 50s and the 70s when commercial farming was really taking over.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they're moving dairies down into the Central Valley
mm-hmm.
and really hard to compete at that time. When he got ill and there was nobody at that time to take over, they sold all the dairy cows and the ranch laid dormant for about 50 years. So my growing up was this beautiful, wonderful, pristine ranch that grew one little grandma. That's all we grew out there.
Uh-huh.
And she passed away in 2005, and it took us about 2 years to kind of settle everything. So this whole sustainable family ranch business reinvigoration of it
mm-hmm.
is a new thing for us. And we certainly had the same facilities that we're functioning off the same facilities that my great-great-grandfather built.
Mm-hmm.
We're also functioning off the same hand-dug well that he dug. And so we've kind of made do with what we've got at this point. And we learned through slow foods and through the meat buying club and different sources that pastured and heritage meats were mm-hmm. There was a need for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we got into actually, and also thanks to 4-H, we learned a lot by doing projects with the kids.
Uh-huh.
They were the first ones really to do a chicken project for the fair. And
so was that the twins?
Uh-huh. The twins were showing chickens. That was you were about 5 years old.
Yeah.
When you started doing that.
Wow.
And
that's really young.
So that taught us about the breeds of chickens and how to raise them and what to watch. And
mm-hmm.
then same thing with pigs. The pigs was their second animal that they showed. And that got us into our pig operation. And the sheep and cows, those are pretty easy. And so now they're on to showing steers. But we're learning more through the 4-H projects. We get educated on the animal husbandry part. And then mm-hmm. we apply it to the farm. And we're finally making a little business out of it again.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So let's start with the chickens.
Mm-hmm.
How many do you have?
Right now, we probably run about 5,000. We have about...
So you didn't start really tiny.
Well, we did. We started... We believe it or not, we get them through the mail.
Mm-hmm. We know that. Okay. We know how that works.
And we started out getting about 100 chicks a week. Mm-hmm. And then once people found out that we had them, we couldn't keep up, and we increased it. And we only started the chicken operation last November.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And so now we're up to getting about 600 chickens a week, 500 to 600 mm-hmm. baby chicks. And it takes us 11 weeks mm-hmm. to get them up to market weight because we're dealing with a heritage breed.
What breed?
The French term is La Rouge, but mm-hmm. La Rouge is sort of a patented term, much like Meritage wine, uh-huh. right? So they have an American name called Freedom Rangers.
Freedom Rangers. Mm-hmm. And... what's the difference for people who don't quite understand what that is? And one of the common ones, if I get it right, it's, oh gosh, it's got Cornish on the tie.
Cornish cross.
Mm-hmm. Are those the ones that are bred to have really huge breasts and they don't like stand up so well and they grow really fast?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so even some of the people doing pastured chickens or what they're calling range chickens are doing the Cornish cross.
Exactly.
So let's talk about what makes the heritage breeds different and better.
Well, they haven't been modified, say, in a laboratory and, mm-hmm. and bred for this mass reproduction or mass production, rather, I should say, because one of the differentiating facts between the commercial bird and a heritage bird is the Cornish cross, they don't naturally reproduce.
They don't?
No. Because they're artificially inseminated in order to be able to reproduce. Same thing with our pigs. We have a heritage pig that we work with, the Hereford breed. Uh-huh. Same thing with them. So animals that have been modified for commercial reproduction, they've been so modified in their reproductive systems and as well as their organ systems have been so compromised that yes, they can't stand. And hold their own body weight after a certain point. Mm-hmm. They can't reproduce. They lose their natural foraging instincts. Mm-hmm. Like if you had, for example, one of our birds out in the field and you had a Cornish cross bird, mm-hmm. that Cornish cross is just going to sit there. It's just going to just sit. And whereas ours are actually kind of...
Doing what chickens do.
They're flapping wings. They're picking immature cocks are picking little cockfights. and they're stretching out their legs and uh-huh. dusting and whatnot. And you will see, five times the activity out of one of our birds than you will a Cornish cross. Yeah.
And, I don't know. If you are what you eat... do you really want to be eating something that doesn't reproduce naturally?
Right,
just
right.
Doesn't seem like the way you want to go with your diet.
Up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. This Colonel Sanders job is getting me down. A crazy chicken chasing me all over town. Psycho chicken.
It's Mouthful here on KRCB. We're talking with Nancy Prebelich of Gleason Ranch. We also have in the house Alexander and Nicholas Holland and Samantha Hollum. We're going to be hearing from them in a little bit. But you had so much interesting stuff to say today at the farmer's market. You know, there's this new thing that I'm starting to hear about and you're starting to see in markets, air-dried chickens.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not read anything about it. I just looked at the website from the place down in the Central Valley that's doing it to see...
Pittman Farms.
Yeah, just mm-hmm. to see real quickly, what the process was. I sort of had in the back of my mind I'd research it sometime soon. But instinctively, it was like, well, maybe that just concentrates the texture, concentrates the flavor because they're not being diluted with water. And I can be completely wrong. I don't mind being wrong. That was just my instinct. So let's talk about... first of all, let's talk about quickly how a chicken is processed. We don't have to go into minute detail, mm-hmm. but what happens? You take them, You take them for their one bad day.
Their one bad day. Yeah, that's what I say to people all the time. They go, you know, those poor animals. It's like, look, if we were all so lucky that we could have a nice life in this wonderful environment and we just suffer one bad day, it'd be great. Basically, they take them. They have these shackles. And chickens are perfectly fine being hung. Actually, it's a calming effect.
Yeah, you turn a chicken upside down and they're calming. Yeah, I have a chicken.
Oh, yeah.
She lives with 8 other chickens. And when you pick up one of the chickens and turn them upside down, it calms them. They quit fighting so much.
So they grab them by the legs. They hang the legs up in shackles so they're hanging upside down. They go through a stunner that kind of quickly stuns them, and it puts them through at the same time a hot scalding bath to wet the feathers. Mm-hmm. Goes around, they slice the throat, because you actually don't want to cut the spinal cord or the vocal cords. You want to do on the sides of the neck, which is something we learned. Because growing up hunting, we just always, just cut the necks off and wrung them.
Now, why don't you want to cut the spinal cord?
Because that can... basically, what you want to do when you process in any animals, you just want to cut them to bleed them.
Yeah, you want to bleed it.
And when you do that kind of shock, that will actually make the meat tough.
Oh, no, so it'll put the adrenaline in that then causes the bad effect.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And then they go through the line and they get plucked by pluckers and eviscerated and cut up or bagged.
Where does the water come in?
Oh, the water part.
The cooling.
Right after they get... they're plucked and eviscerated, then you want to immediately bring the temperature of the body down. Mm-hmm. And you want to keep it down to, I forget what exactly the degrees was, but a nice ice cold for about 45 minutes before you put it into a cooler. Mm-hmm. And so the traditional, at least American tradition, is to put it in basically a communal bath. There's a big vat of ice water, and most people that do small poultry processing on farm sites, this is how you do it too. It's the way our grandparents all did it. You just set the birds in the cold bath and till they are there for a while. So this new thing is based off of European and Canadian tradition that they've done for eons and years. And it's air chilled. And there's two types of air chilled. There's dry air chilled, which basically means the carcasses they don't go through that communal bath at all, that ice water bath. They just get set on racks in a room, a very, very, very cold air conditioned room. And it takes about twice the amount of time to get that temperature dropped. But they're not, what you're saying, as far as the pores aren't absorbing any water. And there's the evaporative air chill, which is that they're in rooms that have these constant, really heavy fog misters. So they are still being exposed to moisture. The pores are still able to absorb the chlorinated water. You chlorinate it to kill any pathogens on the skin. So those are the two systems. And it's a new thing. It's kind of like, in my opinion, it's almost like organic label became so common, and they kind of needed a new gimmick.
What will set you apart?
Yeah, exactly. And the way I look at it is there's two things that they claim with this air chilled. One is that it's safer because you're not at risk of cross-contamination having the various birds in the common bath. And two, that you're conserving water. There's only been one, if you even want to call it a study. I don't even call it a study. I claim that there's no significant research to claim the safety issue at all. Because the one thing that is published was a study produced by those who are doing the air chill. And they only compared it to the one air chill factory to one traditional, one of the very, or I say American traditional, say communal bath processes. And even in that research, there wasn't any substantial results to claim that it's safer. And whereas you would say, okay, there's no cross-contamination, at the same time, birds that actually go through a bath have the opportunity for any surface pathogens to get washed off of them. Whereas if you take that bird, the pathogens that are on the skin are going to stay on the skin as they sit on the shelf and get cold. The other claim, as far as conservation of water, yes, it does conserve water, but it also takes twice as long and takes twice as much of the energy. Mm-hmm. So you're trading water conservation for energy use.
Yeah.
And one of the things that just bothers me as a local producer, who also is locally processed. We're processed right here at Fulton.
Right, and you're the only family farm that Fulton mm-hmm. is processing.
That Fulton's processing right now. And they function off their own well system. So it's mm-hmm.
Do they recycle their water?
And they do. They recycle their water and they irrigate uh-huh. out into the fields. We also run off of our own well system. Uh-huh. So we're also using our own water source. And when you think that the majority of all your birds, even Petaluma poultry bird, mm-hmm. is raised in the Central Valley, I always think, well, whose bright idea was it to raise chickens in 110 degree heat in the middle of the damn desert?
Chickens seem to react a bit like I did to the heat. Anything over about 72 is really uncivilized.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, they even on the for example, if you went on the Pittman website, they have a little video, uh-huh. and I watched it. And one of the things that I that really stuck out to me was saying how wonderful these coops are because they're temperature controlled, and it's during the summer heat, it's more comfortable inside where the chickens are than it is outside. And how much energy is that taking and how much water to keep these birds hydrated and whatnot? Whereas, for example, on our coastal, you know, it's a moderate temperature. It's mm-hmm. one of the reasons why Petaluma was the chicken capital of the world. My grandmother used to work for Petaluma Poultry mm-hmm. when she was in her 20s as a candler, was because of our moderate temperature. Mm-hmm.
Birds like to be outside.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't want to be inside. One thing, with the air-dried birds mm-hmm. being produced right now, what breed are they using?
The Cornish.
Oh, they're using the Cornish.
Cornish cross, yeah.
Okay.
We are, as far as I actually know, the Pittmans have started doing a heritage breed. Oh, I'm not exactly sure which one. Uh-huh. I think it's California Bronze uh-huh. that they're doing, that they just started. I haven't seen it in any of our local markets. Mm-hmm. But I know that we're one of the only heritage chicken producers in the area. Mm-hmm. There's one other woman in Vacaville uh-huh. that does it as well.
And now, where do people get the birds? You can join the Sonoma County Meat Buying Club.
Sonoma County Meat Buying Club, which is a wonderful organization that has helped all of us local ranchers.
Yeah, I love what they're doing. Marisa has been a guest on Mouthful several times.
Yeah.
And we've had Meat Buying Club on at least twice. It's
yeah.
really a great concept.
Yeah.
And it looks like the execution is going really well, too.
Yeah. Now, and this was our first week, actually, our second week, sorry, in farmers markets. Our first in Santa Rosa and Sebastopol uh-huh. Of selling the individual cuts and making uh-huh. those available.
And how did that go today?
Well, we sold out.
You did.
Great. We got to bring more chicken and more red meat as well. Uh-huh. Yeah, we completely sold out as people are becoming aware that that's available now. Mm-hmm. You can also, we're the only ones that you can find in Oliver's Market.
Oh, in Oliver's.
We love Oliver's Market in Santa Rosa and Cotati. I literally called them up one day and they said, just without really any question, they liked the idea, liked the concept. It's what they're about, supporting local, and said, yeah, give me a case. And we've been going strong ever since. So it's really fantastic to have Oliver's Market. Where else are we? We're Planet Organics out mm-hmm. of Sonoma. We're also down in the Bay Area at Byright Market in San Francisco mm-hmm. and Three Stone Hearth, which is a mm-hmm. community kitchen.
And now you do farm direct sales too, in some way, don't you?
In some way. Uh-huh. You can contact me through our website, but basically all we can really handle are like a case at a time.
A case at a time,
yeah.
So you can't say, I need a chicken for dinner tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you can get together with your neighbors and you can get a case.
Absolutely.
And now, at the market today, you were selling, the chickens were fresh, they weren't frozen,
mm-hmm.
right?
Correct.
And that is just really awesome. Mm-hmm. That's great. I understand the reasons that a lot of people have to freeze their fabulous meat and chicken, mm-hmm. but it's just so great to be able to get it fresh.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Woke up this morning, heard a chicken squalling down at my chicken roost. I rushed down there, but a little too late.
You are listening to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. It's Michelle Jordan. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you're enjoying the show. I knew that when Nancy and I got in the studio together, we're going to be able to talk for a full hour without stopping about chickens. I could just tell when I talked to her today. And next week, I'm buying a chicken.
Very good.
I really wanted to today, but I already knew I had too much food in the house. And, you know, it would be silly. But it just feeling it, it felt good in my hand. You know, I can tell a good chicken, and I love chicken. But what I want to hear, okay, I want to hear from the kids. So we have Nicholas and Alexander, identical twins.
Yeah.
So let's see. Alexander and Nicholas, am I right?
Yes.
Okay, Alexander to my left, Nicholas to my right, and then Samantha. And you boys are 11?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Samantha, how old are you? Five. And do you like to eat chicken?
Yes.
Do you like to see the chickens on the ranch?
Yes.
Yeah. And how about you boys? You said your first 4-H project was raising chickens?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What can you how many did you raise that first time? Do you remember?
About like 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard?
Yeah, not really.
Yeah.
What's the goal for how you raise them? What remember you had to bring them all into the same weight?
Yeah.
Oh, so you had to like watch their weight and feed them the right amount so that they would grow at the same rate?
Yep.
And did you enjoy doing that?
Yeah.
And then what happens? So 4-H projects, they're shown at the fair or the harvest fair, is that right?
They're shown at like the fair.
Uh-huh. And then what happens after the fair? Do you get, or actually I should ask you, did you win any ribbons? Or what have, do you get any sort of recognition? You know, do they say, here's a prize because you have really cool chickens that all weigh the same amount?
Yeah, well, like a first place hit ribbon stamp on a little piece of paper that says it's your chicken.
Mm-hmm. So did your chickens win ribbons?
Yes.
They did. Congratulations. And then at the end of the fair, is there an auction? Do people buy your chickens? Do you take your chickens home?
Yeah.
We take our chickens home, and we take care of them, put them back in their cages.
Uh-huh. Do they ever become dinner?
No.
No. So the 4-H chickens are your buddies?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Samantha, do you think you're going to do, want to do a 4-H project?
Yes.
Do you know what you want to do yet?
Yes.
Do you want to tell us? Would you tell us? Or is it a secret?
Well, what are you going to show this year, Sam? You're showing a pig. It's your first year to show a pig, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're showing a pig. Does the pig have a name?
No.
No? But do you take care of it every day?
Well...
Almost.
Almost
every day. Well, that's great. You know, I didn't know that 4-H started so young, so that's really great. Congratulations on you taking... Even helping take care of a pig is a very cool thing to do when you're 5 years old. Are you boys going to do anything this year?
Yeah, we're going to show some pigs, and at the fairgrounds, we're going to auction off some steers.
Some steers?
Uh-huh.
Cool. What about lambs, too? Who gets involved with lambs?
We're not really in that showing. We don't really show those.
Oh, you don't show them? But you do raise them, right, at the ranch?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe it's Aunt Nancy's turn to talk about the lambs.
Well, the lambs were... Gosh, the lambs are one of the easiest things we have going on, and that was my first project when I was a kid. We weren't able to be involved in 4-H or anything like that because we were, as my grandmother lived out on the ranch, we just got into sheep because they were great lawnmowers. But
But we do raise a Dorset cross that is a shared herd or from the same breeding stock as Posey, who is our
Posey.
Uh-huh. So we do the same breed.
Posey, we should say Posey Ranch.
Uh-huh.
You see their, I see their meat pretty often.
Yeah.
They've been ranchers for a really long time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we get our same stock from him and and run them. And gosh, sheep are real nice and easy. And it's really especially easy having Joe Posey as our neighbor.
Oh, yeah. And do you have critter problems? I mean, do you have to get certain types of dogs or something to guard against the predators?
Actually, we had a fabulous learning experience this year. We were losing at least one lamb every night to coyotes.
Every night? How many? Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. It was heartbreaking. And it was discouraging. Mm-hmm. And I was at the feed store talking about what are we going to do about this. Our neighbor has the dogs, you know, and we thought, well, kind of being right on next to him, the dogs would help prevent, but he was having the same darn problem with coyotes. Cause it's a lot of land and a lot of acreage mm-hmm. to patrol for those dogs, you know. Yeah. And the dogs don't come cheap either.
What breeds do you use?
What are they?
Anatolians. There's so many. There's four or five that tend to be used. There's the ones that they get from Turkey. I know they have some out at Clark Summit Ranch. And also Canvas Ranch has some interesting ones. But they're breeds I hadn't heard of before.
Yeah, I'm not very familiar with the various breeds. But when I was at this feed store, the gentleman that happened to be there was a llama rancher, and he says, "Were you aware that llamas make great guard animals?" And I was like, "Really?" And apparently, he says, "I'll tell you what, I'll sell you a llama. It was cheaper for us than a dog." And
The price of llamas has plummeted since the early 90s.
And I remember as a kid, they were like $1,000 a pop. I mean, they were crazy.
And for a while, I mean, people were selling certain llamas for five figures.
Yes.
I had a friend who raised llamas and watched as the bottom fell out of the market.
Yeah, yeah. So he says, I'll sell you one. If it doesn't work, I'll take it back or I'll trade them out for someone else. But I got a really good one that's his job. Picked up some sheepdogs there. that he's a really good guard llama. His name's Ace. We put him mm-hmm. out there with the sheep and fixed the problem right up.
Really? So you haven't been losing?
No, we did have a little bit of, it stopped altogether. Uh-huh. Then we started having another little bout of problems. And really it was our fault because we were asking Ace, our llama, to patrol too big of an area. Uh-huh. We moved all the sheep and the llama into a smaller area. And everybody's happy as punch again.
That's great. Now, and did Joe get llamas?
No. He's sticking with the dogs.
And how's it? Is he?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure how it's going with him. But yeah, it's a constant mm-hmm. effort.
Yeah. Now, how many lamb do you usually keep?
What do we have? We probably have about 60 ewes.
Uh huh. And they produce.
They can.
Produce two or three a year?
No, one or two.
Oh, one or two. Okay.
Yeah, one or two. So we probably have, 120 uh-huh. there, 150.
And how are those sold? Do you sell those to the people? You know, there's a pretty big community that wants whole lamb.
Mm-hmm.
So do you do everything cut and, you know?
What we do is directly off the farm, if you want a half or a whole animal, uh-huh. you can contact us directly through our website. And we basically will reserve you one when it's ready mm-hmm. to go, give you a call. It gets slaughtered right on the ranch. Mm-hmm. And then actually our lambs, we can either do it on the ranch or we can take it to Panazeras. It's right here in Occidental.
Oh, yeah, Panazeras.
And that's our local USDA facility. Mm-hmm. And then we take it to either Willowside or Bud's mm-hmm. Custom Meats. And then you can have it custom cut however you like. And it's good to go. It's all done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we handle our lamb sales. Mm-hmm. For individual cuts, that's why the Sonoma Meat Buying Club is so fantastic.
Yeah.
They buy our whole lambs and then they take care of the individual primal uh-huh. cuts. Because on the ranch at this point at least, again, because we're functioning off the same facilities uh-huh. as my great-grandfather, we don't have the facilities to do the processing or
and to get
cutting.
To be a butcher shop practically is what you'd have to be. That would
exactly.
be, I would imagine, really hard to accomplish on a ranch.
Yeah.
And then you also do, Beef and pork.
Beef and pork.
So let's go to pork first.
Our our pork is another item. Our chicken and pork are probably our two best items because mm-hmm. it's really hard to find local pasture-raised animals. Mm-hmm. Our pork, we also have a heritage breed that we work with, which is the Hereford. They're just like Hereford cows, that white and reddish spot colored. We also crossbreed them with the Hampshire and the Yorkshire. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple reasons why you do that. One is for proliferation. The Hamps and the Yorks will have more babies. Mm-hmm. You'll have less losses. And also you want to, as you start working with more heritage breeds, you'll notice, like, for example, the Cornish crossbird, again, has that big mm-hmm. breast and mm-hmm. whatnot. When you get into heritage breeds, no matter what kind of animal you're working with, your meat-to-bone ratio or your meat-to-fat mm-hmm. ratio is very different. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, when you cross it with something, it kind of is a little bit consumer-friendly. You're still uh-huh. preserving and promoting those heritage animals, uh-huh. But you're also able to satisfy consumer needs that uh-huh. maybe don't want a whole lot of fat. Like the Hereford is known for its lard content.
Yum.
Yeah, I know, right?
Sounds good to me.
And they're actually on a really cool program, feeding-wise. It's all recycled feed that we do. Mm-hmm. We go to our local bakery and tortilla factory, and all of their extra or unused product. Mm-hmm. We pick up stale bread, stale tortillas. Then we go to Moonlight Brewing Company and
Friend Brian.
Yeah, Brian Hunt. And so always drink, go to the pub, grab yourself a pint of Death and Taxes. In fact, the boys were out helping me slop. I'm probably the only auntie that brings 11-year-old boys smelling of beer, but we were slopping beer yeast to the pigs, and that's their protein source. And then we get sour milk from our local school district that the kids don't go through, uh-huh. and that's their vitamins. And I checked with UC Davis, and that's a complete balanced pig feed right there, your carbohydrates, protein, uh-huh. and vitamins, and it's all recycled locally.
Oh, that's a great idea, and I imagine it makes them taste really good.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But what size do you harvest at various sizes?
Yeah, various sizes. We have some fabulous chefs like Mark Maliki out uh-huh. at Cafe St. Rose uh-huh. or Patrick Tafoy at the Duck Club restaurant who like the small suckling pigs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mark's a real fan of suckling
pigs. Yeah, yeah. And he's also done some suckling lamb as well from uh-huh. us. So we can harvest as little as even 40 to 60 pounds. Mm-hmm. But our typical market weight would be 240 pounds.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then moving right along, uh-huh. actually, let's take one more musical break. We have so much good music for this show. Can't pass it up.
Had a little lamb. His face was white as snow, yeah.
Okay, we're just having a blast here. You guys are so great. I'm going to learn something. Mutton busting? Is that what you're going to teach me about, boys?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's when you, ride a non-ridden sheep and you grab onto the fur as long as you can.
Oh, until it knocks you off?
Yeah, until you get, hit, shaked off.
Uh-huh. So it's not quite, it doesn't sound quite as scary as, those things they do in rodeos, the bucking broncos.
Right.
It sounds like maybe a softer version of that.
Yeah.
Who's the best, who stays on the longest? You do? Alexander. Okay, have you tried it yet, Samantha? Okay, so
this is this will be your first year, huh?
Is there a certain time of year that this is done?
At the fair, they do it on Farmer's Day.
Oh, you do it at the fair?
Yeah, at the Sonoma County Fair. And do we do it at the Petaluma Fair as well? I think so. And yeah, we're big fans of Farmer's Day. Huge fans, because they got mutton busting. They've got the pig chase.
They got
pig scramble.
The pig scramble. So every year we do that.
You know, and I have to say, to have the studio here, I have had so many farmers on this show, and to have the studio filled with young people who are this into farming just warms my heart. It is great. You guys, all of you, and by guys, I mean the girls too. That includes you, Samantha. It's a really great thing that you're doing. We haven't talked about your beef yet, and also you're doing heritage turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
So let's come back to beef. I may even have you back to do a whole show on beef. But heritage turkeys, that's just seasonal, right? You do that for the holidays.
Yeah.
So November.
Yeah, because we got those turkeys already a couple months ago.
Oh, you got them already?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. And they're big already.
And what breeds?
We're doing, boys, help me out. What are the breeds? Yes, Samantha? We have the bronze, the bourbon red.
Bourbon red.
And there's one other one that's escaping my mind.
Two.
it'll come to them. This is actually a project, again, that was started by the boys through 4-H and Slow Foods Russian River.
Yeah, Russian River did they've done the heritage breed program for a few years now.
And they started with just about four families, I think. Four 4-H families was the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were one of those families.
Oh, okay.
And that's how we got into it. And
more people have been starting to do it now.
Mm-hmm. And it's been a pilot project that was exemplary for 4-H chapters across the country, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been really blessed to be a part of something like that. And they're raised the same way. They're in a portable, big portable tractor, movable turkey tractor. That actually takes the big, the chickens we can move by hand every day.
But we have to use the big tractor.
Now, is that the kind with a little house?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That they put, have you been to Clark Summit Farm?
No. Okay. They're relatives of ours, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Because they have their cute little, they look like little doll houses.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on trailer hitches.
Uh-huh.
And they just move them up and down down the mountain or the hill and to the side.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is the same principle.
Same thing. We put all the turkeys inside the little house,
mm-hmm.
and then we hook it up to the John Deere, and we drag it a few feet onto new. And then they also have an outdoor run that we're able to move by hand,
uh-huh.
and we hook it all back up. And yeah, and so they'll be ready. We have a batch that will be ready in November, and a batch that will be ready for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
So we have turkey Thanksgiving and Christmas. But it's what was really neat about how they started this project was Slow Foods. Bought the birds, they bought all the feed,
uh-huh.
gave it to the kids to raise, and then they bought it back from the kids.
Uh-huh.
So they were the ones that kind of started the customer base and was uh-huh. really able to help facilitate. And now that this is our, fourth year doing it?
Yeah.
Yeah? We actually did a few on our own, and we're already sold out.
We're
already sold.
I was going to say, hey, save me a turkey.
Yeah, no can do, unfortunately.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, but it takes a really long time to raise those guys.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and so then the beef.
And the beef, we do a Angus cross, black Angus cross, and they're totally grass-fed. And we probably run about...
24?
No, a little bit more than that. I would say about 40 to 50 head of those.
Mm-hmm.
And
how long does it take for one to be ready for market?
I would say
about like 9 weeks.
No, honey. the beef take a long, long time. They probably take about 18 months.
That was what I was going to guess. Yeah. It was about
18 months. And anything that is pasture raised takes about twice as long as anything uh-huh. that's grain fed or commercially uh-huh. raised.
And so the beef, how is that sold? Is that through the meat buying club?
Through the meat buying club for cuts.
Uh-huh.
And then, or you can do a half or whole animal. Mm-hmm. And that also gets processed here locally at Rancho here in Petaluma.
Uh-huh.
And or we can also have it done on the ranch, either one. And then we send it, same thing, to Willow Cider Buzz, uh-huh. and they custom cut it for you.
Huh. Now, is Rancho closing? Did I hear that?
I don't know, but I know it's been a struggle for all of our local processors,
uh-huh.
and that's one of the things that the locavore movement needs to help get behind.
Absolutely. Yeah, that needs to, it's not viable for ranchers to have to travel.
Exactly.
A great distance.
Like our pork, for example, that has to be USDA processed to go through the meat buying club. We have to take that, unfortunately, all the way up to Orland.
To Orland, yeah. And I know that Brock
yes.
Fulmer, he has to go, I don't know if it's, I think it's somewhere in Sacramento. He
yes.
has to go from Potter Valley over to Sacramento. And the facilities are such that it must be frozen.
Yes.
He cannot leave with that meat fresh
exactly.
and sell it. It has exactly. to be frozen.
Exactly. So our we're fortunate with our chicken here at Fulton Valley Farms, our beef at Rancho, our lamb at Panazares and Occidental, our turkeys we do by hand with Slow Foods. So we're really fortunate, all of them except for the pork, and we really do need a lot more community support. To say, there has been talk for a plant to be in Ukiah, I've heard, for many, many, many years. But nobody wants to have...
No one wants a plant in their backyard.
In their backyard.
Yeah.
But if you want, if you don't want the commercial food, if you don't want genetically modified animals, if you don't want all these other things, then, you know, you get let people do what they do.
Yeah.
We'll take care of the dirty work for you and,
yeah.
and we'll clean up afterwards.
It's a reality, and it's something I think it's just really, really indicative of how far Americans have come from farms. And, you know, so many people, since they've been moving up to Sonoma County because it's become a sexy location, and they buy this beautiful place and it's next door to a ranch, and they start calling and complaining because it smells.
Exactly.
Welcome to farming.
Exactly. And yeah. then we have the vineyards that, in fact, that's another story, is that we have vineyards we're contending with that are tapping into our water table.
Yes.
And we're dealing with that right this very minute. Uh-huh. And it's scary. It's very scary.
You have vineyards out there?
Our next door neighbor has just been, actually the old Posey Ranch has just been bought, and they're putting in vineyards, and they went poking around looking for water. And where did they find it? Exactly, directly across from our well, about 10 feet from the fence line. So we're really scared that that'll tap us out. Yeah. Oh. We'll see what happens. Uh-huh. But yeah, the vineyards and people moving up and not understanding the realities yeah. of being in a farm community.
Yeah, people really need to understand that. And I have absolutely nothing against wine and grapes. And I think we grow fabulous grapes
absolutely.
In Sonoma County. But, you know, biodiversity on every level is a really good thing. And that's the only way to make it sustainable in the long run.
You want a good state to go with your cab.
Absolutely. Yes, you do. Well, we are just about out of time. So the first thing I want to do is give contact information. Mm-hmm. The website is?
www.gleasonranch.com, G-L-E-A-S-O-N, ranch.com.
Gleasonranch.com. And if somebody wants to phone you, which probably there are actually people who listen to Mouthful who don't go online.
Oh,
so
yes.
Let's give them a number, too.
407-477-0879.
That's 707-477-0879.
Yes.
And, you know, you can always send me an email, mouthful@michelleannajordan.com gets to me, as does catsmilk@sonic.net. Well, just congratulations on what you're doing.
Thank
it sounds
you.
Like you put a lot of effort into it in a very short time, and it's, you know, it's really great.
Coming along.
And boys, Alexander and Nicholas, thank you. And congratulations and good luck. I hope you have great success at the fair. And
thank you.
Is this your first radio experience?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm proud to have offered it. I will remember that you were on here first. Samantha, I hope you have a really great time at the fair with your pig. And I hope it inspires you to do more things. Thank you for being on Mouthful.
Thank you very much.
Maybe I'll see you again at the farmer's market. And you will be at Farmer's Market in Santa Rosa on Saturday?
On Saturday, yes.
And Sebastopol on Sundays?
Yes, and Windsor on Sundays as well.
Oh,
and
so you split yourself in
we
two?
We do. We working with the Meat Buying Club, they're also able to represent. So we're in Windsor on Fridays, Healdsburg on Saturdays.
Oh.
What's the other one I do on Saturdays? We do two.
Healdsburg and Santa Rosa.
And Santa Rosa. So. And then Sundays, we do Windsor and Sebastopol.
Okay, now you said Windsor on Friday.
Oh.
And did you mean Sonoma?
Sonoma. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, because there's a market in Sonoma on Friday.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It's really been an inspirational day for me, thanks to you. And thank you for tuning in. Meet me back here next week for another episode of Mouthful, the One Country's Most Delicious Hour. And you know, it's Father's Day. If you got a daddy, call him or do something nice for him, you know? It's a good thing if you have one, especially if he's a good one. Have a great week.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.